Back to the book of Numbers. All right. So first of all, the word numbers refers to the two numberings of the people. We find one of them in chapter 1, another one over in chapter 26, where they numbered all the people. And you remember as they were, the context of all in the book of Numbers, remember they had just left Egypt in Exodus. So Exodus chapter 12 was the Passover, and they left Egypt in this. So the rest of the book of Exodus, we studied through that a couple of years ago, was the people heading toward the promised land. Just barely, it only took place in a few months there. They were just leaving Egypt, and they were at Mount Sinai, and God was giving them the instructions regarding the tabernacle, and they were building the tabernacle. Right, and then the book of Leviticus is all about the instructions regarding the sacrifices. And so all the things about the priests and the instructions for how to operate the tabernacle and the instructions and all their offerings and that. Then it brings us to Numbers. Now, Numbers really is the book that deals with, well, it starts out with the numbering of the people. And that was because they numbered the people right after they left Egypt. And the significance of that was so we can see who was there then, who was there at the end of the book of Numbers. And you'll see that the numbers changed dramatically, and that's all part of what we're going to be noting here today. The numbers, I shouldn't say the numbers changed dramatically, the people changed dramatically. The numbers stay about the same, but the people changed a lot. And the Hebrew title for the book is called In the Wilderness. But the content here deals with the history of the wanderings and the people during the wilderness wanderings. All right, now, if you look at your little map down at the bottom, and it's not the clearest map in the world, but it gives you a little bit of an idea. You have Egypt on the left-hand side with the two rivers coming down through the middle of there and lots of little ones that they didn't show on the map. And then you can see the little ziggy line that goes across there. That's where they estimate where the people may have come out of Egypt and came across the Red Sea over here on this other side. There's all kinds of debate over where they crossed the Red Sea. Some of them say they crossed it over on the other side. Some of them say it's nothing more than a little marsh. I don't believe that story. But there's a lot of different ideas on where they crossed the Red Sea. But the most likely one seems to be over here on the right-hand side as you follow the little line across there. And we talked about that when we went through the book of Exodus. But there was probably about between 2.5 and 3 million people that were traveling. So there's a lot of people. And with them, was all of their animals and, you know, all the things that they had. They were slaves, so they didn't have a lot of stuff, but they did have some things. Plus, they had taken a lot of stuff from the Egyptians. Remember, God told them to borrow from the Egyptians, and God was going to spoil the Egyptians because of the cruelty that the Egyptians had shown toward them all these years. And God was letting them then take advantage of that opportunity. Now, the book covers a period of about 40 years of Israel's history. All right, it was mostly the history of the wanderings. So most of this 40 years, they were wandering through the wilderness. All right, and then on this chart that we see here, the one called Numbers Wanderings and Wilderness Wanderings, you see across the top of the chart, it's got the old generation and then the tragic transition and the new generation. All right, now, that's significant because the old generation, as we're going to find our way as we work our way through the Bible, book here, the first generation was a generation that rejected God. And who can remember the significant turning point when they turned their back on God? John Ray.
I think when they made the... Oh, I think it's when the two men, I always forget the names.
Caleb and...
No. Zamorak? Oh, what's his name? It's with a Z in it somewhere. Anyway, they started stirring the people up against Moses and Aaron.
Well, that was one of the problems. Nadab and Abihu did that.
Yeah, those are two. I always forget the
names. All right. But it was probably the thing that really kind of turned the people away was... Everything seemed to be going pretty good until they got to the border of the promised land, and then they sent in the 12 spies, and they came back and said, no, we're not going to do this. And so that's really when God said, all right, you complained, you were in there searching the land for 40 days. Now you're going to have to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. 1 year for every day that you were in the promised land looking at it. And so that's really the turning point. So this old generation was the complainers that complained there as they got to the border of the promised land. And so God said, you're going to have to spend the rest of your lives in the wilderness. This tragic transition in the middle is basically the 40 years. You see down at the bottom here, most of the way down the chart, there's the first old generation has got a gap of 20 days. Then it's got 38 and three years and 3.5 months. Right, I'm not sure how they got all those. 38 years, 3.5 months. Okay. All right, so it was that period of time when they're actually doing the wandering. And it was during that time that all these complainers died. I mean, that's a lot of people to die. And so all those complainers died during those 38 years. You calculate that up. They had funerals every day.
Almost all the people, what, over 18?
All the people over 20 years old, yes.
All those people, well, with the exception of Moses, I mean, Moses later sinned, but I mean, like Aaron, Moses, probably Miriam, I mean, I'm assuming Moses' children, his wife, and the men who didn't complain. Out of 12 spies.
Joshua and Caleb.
Pretty much them and their families, I'm assuming, would have been.
Nothing's mentioned about their families, but we can assume that their families made it in. And Moses didn't make it in. Aaron didn't make it in. Yeah. They made it to the border. So the only ones that actually made it into the promised land that were there during the complaining was Joshua and Caleb, and assuming their families. All right, so.
Yeah, they shouldn't have grumbled, should they?
So, yeah, well, see, there's a lot of things for us to learn. I mean, we can complain, you know, say, well, they shouldn't have done that, but how many times have we complained? All right, so you got this middle tragic time here where 38 and a half years, or 38 and a third years, and then the last 5 months, toward the end of the book here is the new generation. So we're going to see that so the book is divided into these three sections. The first section of the old generation, all the way up to where they get to the edge of the promised land and they reject God's offer. Then the 38 plus years that they're wandering in the wilderness. And then the last 5 months, this new generation, they're preparing to go into the promised land. And that brings us to the book of Deuteronomy, which is the second giving of the law. Moses is speaking with the people and preparing them, reviewing the law, going over all that God had expected of them, and preparation for them to go in. All right, so that's how it's breaking down. Now you see the second line here talks about three main activities: the preparing, the wandering, and the renewing. All right, so there's a time of preparing to go to the promised land, and they got to the border, and then they rejected. Then there's the wandering, and then there's the renewing, the time of getting right with God and preparing for the end. And then the next line down, it talks about the locations. The preparing was at Mount Sinai. The wandering, of course, was in the wilderness. And then the renewing was on the plains of Moab. All right, so take a look at your map again. And down along the right-hand side, the line starts going up toward Israel. Israel's in the northern part of the corner of the map. All right, so it goes up to that side. They're on the eastern side of the Dead Sea. That's the area of Moab. All right, so on the east side of the Dead Sea. So that's Moab. If you look at a bigger map, you can see it a little bit more clearly. But it gives you a little bit of an idea here what is taking place. So they left Egypt. They crossed the Red Sea. They were down in Midian for a while, and then they came up and they wandered in the wilderness for those 40 years. Or actually, when they were down in Midian, that was where Sinai was down in there. And then they wandered in the wilderness for 38 years, and then they headed back up to the edge of the Canaan. Okay? So the significant things here, there was the bronze serpent, the water from the rock, the manna, and Balaam's prophecies. All of those things are part of this great book, and a lot of things here we're going to learn from that. Okay? So as we move on down, the contents of the notes here deals with this top chart that we just looked at here. So now let's look at the author and the purpose. Right, the evidence points to Moses. You know, we can read in verse chapter 33 and verse number 2. 33 and verse number 2. It says, and Moses wrote their goings out according to their journeys by the commandment of the Lord, and these are their journeyings according to their goings out. All right, so clearly speaks here that Moses wrote this. And all through the book, it's Moses communicating with the people, Moses talking to them. So I don't think there's really any debate over the fact that Moses was the author, the human author there. And the message was... is one of God's patience and faithfulness in the face of Israel's continual grumbling and rebellion. Over and over again, all through the book, they're complaining about one thing right after another, all the way through the book. So then that brings us down to the New Testament references. You know, this book is quoted in the New Testament, or referred to in the New Testament, a number of times. What I'd like us to do here tonight is I'd like... For volunteers to look up one verse of the New Testament verses, and then I'll read the ones in Numbers, and then we'll have one of you read the New Testament one. So Mel, why don't you read John 13:14? And we'll just do them one at a time, and then we can do it that way. So in Numbers chapter 21.
Can we do the next one?
Well, I'll do them one at a time, and then everybody can pay attention to what we're doing. Okay. So, Numbers 21, 4 and 4 to 9 says, And they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea and compassed the land of Edom. And the soul of the people was much discouraged because of the way. And the people spake against God and against Moses. Wherefore, have ye brought us up out of the Egypt to die in the wilderness, for there is no bread, neither is there any water, and our soul loathes this light bread. They didn't like their manna. And the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and much people of Israel died. Therefore the people came to Moses and said, we have sinned, we have spoken against the Lord and against thee. Pray unto the Lord that he may take away the serpents from us. And Moses prayed for the people, and the Lord said unto Moses, make thee a fiery serpent, and set it upon a pole, that it may come to pass that every one that is bitten, when he looketh upon it, shall live. And Moses made a serpent of brass, and put it upon a pole, and it came to pass that if a serpent had bitten any man, when he beheld the serpent of brass, he lived. Okay, so Mel, you read John 3:14.
And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up.
Okay, so a direct reference to this passage here in Numbers. All right. John Ray, you asked for the second one. All right, so that's in 1 Corinthians 10:4. And we'll read now in Numbers 20 and verse number 10. Numbers 20, verse number 10. And Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock, and he said unto them, hear now, ye rebels, must we fetch water out of the rock, out of this rock? All right, Shana?
Okay. Here it is. So this is 1 Corinthians 10:4.
Yes.
And did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of the spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ.
Okay, so here it's talking about this rock that God gave them water from, and now the New Testament refers to that rock as being Christ. All right. Garrett, do you want to read John 6:31-35? And I'll turn over to number 16. 16:15. Okay, number 16:15. And Moses was very wroth and said unto the Lord, respect not their offering. I have not taken one ass from them, neither have I hurt one of them. Okay, Garrett? Somehow I think this wasn't, something wasn't right. Did I read the things? I read the right thing. 16:50. Read what you're going to read there, Garrett. Maybe it'll make more sense than what I just read.
our fathers did eat manna in the desert, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. Then Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father giveth you the rule, so I giveth you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he which cometh down from heaven and giveth life unto the world. Then said they unto him, Lord, evermore give us this bread. And Jesus said unto them, I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, and he that believeth on me shall never thirst.
All right, now the mystery is what's the right verse. There's obviously one here, and I put a wrong typo here. I've had 16:15, but it's obviously not 16:15. Dealing with the manna. Chapter 16 is when they got their manna, but I don't know. I apologize. We'll have to find that one. Anybody find it?
Chapter 11 talks about
manna. 11:15?
11:15. Right. There's Survey of the Old Testament, page 132.
Well, that was that was another spot here. So I'll have to look that one up. Sorry about that. That number's a mistake. I'll give you the correction next week. Alrighty. Let's move on to the next one. Maybe we can get better at that one. Alright, Peter, you want to do this in 2 Peter 1:19? And I'll read Numbers 24 here. Let me see. Get that first. Numbers 24. Numbers 24:17. I shall see him, but not now. I shall behold him, but not nigh. There shall come a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite the corners of Moab, and destroy all the children of Sheth. Okay.
2 Peter 1:19. We have also a more sure word of prophecy, whereunto ye do well that ye take heed, as unto a light that shineth in a dark place, until the day dawn and the day star arise in your hearts.
Okay, so it refers to the day star. It's talking about Christ. This here in Numbers seems to be a prediction of Christ. That's why it is capitalized in our Bible, because the translators felt that way too. Okay? All right, so there's some cross references here. The next one here is the perhaps the pillar of fire pictured in Christ's presence. You know, that is a possibility. It doesn't say for sure, but you remember the pillar of fire by cloud by night and the fire by day was constantly there. It was always with them. It was always a protection for them. It gave them shade in the daytime and gave them light at night, and a really somewhat of a picture of the Lord Jesus Christ. The cities of refuge mentioned throughout the book in the different places there, so we didn't give one particular reference. But the cities of refuge, remember, they were cities set apart so that if someone accidentally killed somebody, or even if they purposely killed somebody, they had to run for their life because they would be caught and killed. So they could go to the city of refuge. In the city of refuge, the elders of the city of refuge then would be kind of the judge and jury to decide whether this guy was guilty. And if he was not guilty, then if he wasn't guilty of murder, but it was an accident, then he had to stay in the city until the death of the high priest. Now, I'm going to have to talk to the Lord about that when I get to heaven, because I don't understand that. But what if the priest was just brand new?
Just have you had a really old high priest.
Yeah, then you got an old gopher that's about ready to die, and you only stay in there for a couple of years, where if you get a young priest, you can be the rest of your life in there.
To hire a hitman.
I don't really understand.
You just so, have to say what it is.
I know, that is true. But why God would put it in those kind of terms, I don't understand that. I can't explain it. That's always been kind of a mystery to me, and a bit of a frustration. But
well, you can ask God about it.
I will. When we get there, I'm going to ask you. That's one of those things.
Could just be a way of making sure time passes so this the heat cools down. Because even if it's an accident, I mean, and, you know, somebody's still going to want revenge. If you give a few decades, this will kind of ensure that there's plenty of time for it.
Well, whatever it was, I mean, what the sad part is here. I mean, if the guy was a murderer, if they condemned him to murder, they were to execute him. But if he was not guilty of murder, it was just an accident. Well, that'd be just like, I mean, accidents happen. And if you just accidentally happen to kill somebody, I mean, that's tragic.
Yeah, but there's
a point of making that life is precious.
Well, that's for sure. Life is precious. We can see that for sure. All right. In Matthew chapter 11, verse number 28, that verse that we're well familiar with, it says, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, I will give you rest." So that's Christ speaking. And again, a picture in a sense of the cities of refuge where they could go for help and protection. Hebrews chapter 6 and verse 18. Is another refuge reference there. Hebrews 6 and verse number 18. "And by two immutable things in which it was impossible for God to lie, we might have a strong consolation who have fled for refuge to lay hold upon the hope set before us." All right, so once again we see the idea of refuge here. Another very interesting story in the book of Numbers is the story of the red heifer. And this was a completely red-colored cow, probably not as red as John Ray's shoes, but it was red in color, and this was to be sacrificed in a special way. In chapter 19, deals with, we're not going to read the whole chapter here, but it deals with this red heifer sacrifice, resembling or perhaps picturing the substitutionary sacrifice of Jesus Christ. So this red heifer. And we'll get to that, and we'll deal with it when we get to that chapter. But this tonight, we're just looking at an overview of the whole book. Hebrews often alludes to the unbelief during the time of Numbers. Many places here, and you got it in your notes here, Hebrews 2, 1 to 4, 3, 6 and following, 5, 11 and following, 10, 36 to 39, and 12, 25 to 29. All of these are references to problems that took place in the book of Numbers. So Paul, when he wrote Hebrews, alluded to it regularly. All right? So the book here is a book that has got a lot of information in it, a lot of helpful stuff in it, and a lot of things we can learn. One of the greatest things we can learn is just from the complaining. You know, if we're not careful, we catch ourselves complaining and being grumblers, and we're no better than they are. And that was a real problem in during those 40 years of the wilderness wandering. Now, some things for us to ponder here. These are just some things for us to discuss. You know, discuss Israel's travel. Think about their travel. What could you say? How would you describe their travels? I mean, think about the situation.
Very hard.
Yes, hard in what ways?
Well, a lot of them didn't have cars.
Oh, none of them had cars.
So they all had to walk.
Yeah, sorry, they were walking, generally.
Well, considering the area where they were walking, there's very few places where you could have a proper time of recuperation and rest, like get the dust off of your feet, cool down. I mean, you were pretty much in a hot tent, or you were standing in the desert sand. I mean, you didn't really have a whole lot of comfort.
Yeah. Jared?
Every time they had to move, they'd take everything with them. So all the cattle and stuff, they probably had a lot of stuff, like tents and everything, setting up.
But the God not make their shoes too last.
Yes.
Like, so
their clothing lasted.
So at least they had a really good pair of quality shoes there, or sandals or whatever they were wearing.
But well, they lasted the whole 40 years with those sandals. Whatever they were wearing.
Imagine trying to keep 2.5 million people together. You have just the strength and the ability of people really. You have kids, you have strong middle-aged people, you have older people, and to try and keep them all moving without becoming stragglers at the back and kilometers in between, that must have been a real challenge for Moses, just to manage that process.
One of the things that we need to remember is, as you look at the map here, I mean, they didn't cover a lot of territory.
They
stopped at long times at places. Sometimes they would be there for months, and then they would move a little ways. This we're talking about 40 years.
40 years.
So that's a long time. John?
But I think that probably when they did move, a lot of it I think something to keep in mind, because if they were just moving for 40 years, that's not, I mean, they're pretty much going in circles, because I mean, only after a few weeks or months of walking, it'd already be at the promised land. But this is just cycling, right? So probably the main reason they would move is resources based, because you've got, you know, a lot of cattle, they need to eat grass, and you'll deplete an area. You have to move to the next one. So that probably was probably a big reason why they moved, wasn't it?
Yeah, either that or the cattle learned to eat manna. I don't know. I mean, there wasn't enough grass there for all those cattle, so they must have learned to eat the manna.
I was told, too, that the actual track that they all took, normally for people it would take 10 days. They took 40 years over it.
Well, that's if when you look at it from that perspective, that's if they went straight from Egypt along the coastline up to Israel. That's about a 10 or 12 day journey. All right. So the way they went down in all through here, that's not a 10 or 12 day journey. That's a long, long trail. But if
40 years.
No, it shouldn't. But see, that's why they did stop a lot. All right. So the travel there, they're traveling all on foot. It was certainly not comfortable. They had all these animals. They had to care for the animals. Plus, during this whole time, people are dying like flies. And there's constant funerals.
There's another thing, too. I've done a lot of reading about the holy wars when people went from Britain to Turkey for the holy wars when they were defending the Byzantine Empire. And even an army of like 100,000, they'd be strung out over like 100 kilometres. You imagine, there were places where only like 4 or 5 people can walk abreast because you're walking between hills and things. Do the maths with a million or 3 million people, 4 abreast. Yeah. It's 100 kilometres away. Just the logistics of keeping messages going from one to the other. You know, we're taking all day to ride a horse down to the end of the column and supplies. You know, who carries the supplies? The people at the front, the people at the back, people in the middle. You know, water.
The toilet.
Toilet facilities.
The toilet facilities would be a major problem.
Tell where the army had been.
The Bible addresses the logistics thing, though, because it was a big issue. That's why Moses' father-in-law sat down and said, Moses, what, the way you're working right now is not efficient. It's not going to work. You need to get some management and get some elders. Yeah. That's how they ended up solving that issue.
And then you think about their camp. You know, their tents and the sanitation that was brought up. I mean, remember the scriptures talk about them carrying a paddle. Well, the paddle was their little shovel to dig their little hole to cover their poo in. And so, but they would have to do this. I mean, when you got a million people, I mean, it's just.
And they weren't all nice people?
No, that's right.
Now you have neighbors that are not very nice.
If you had a straight line, this little diagram is 200 miles. That's 320 kilometers. That's a straight line. You take 2.5 million people and move it 320 kilometers. That's
how
good. I mean, even that would take a long while.
So yes. The people at the front would stop to camp for the night, but the people at the back are still moving. Yes. We can do that tomorrow. Do they stop and camp at night too, or do they get fractured into...
One of the most stressful times, of course, would have been those first few days after they left Egypt. And, you know, the traveling across there. I did calculating and did some calculating about this, and it wouldn't take them that many days from Egypt over to the Red Sea if they kept on moving and didn't have any unnecessary delays. But it's still a long way. It's going to take them quite a while. John?
Imagine the psychological issue of we're not actually going there. We're not going anywhere. We're just walking around in the desert.
They thought they were when they started.
Yeah, when they started, but that was... pretty short order after that. They were just meandering. Yeah. So, you know, Moses is going to get a nick all the time. Moses, where are we going? I don't know.
We're there yet. Don't worry, we're just following.
Okay, Johnny?
So with the estimated number of people, is that, how did I'm just curious, just purely out of curiosity, it's like, how did they work that out? Just by looking at how big...
Well, they know how many soldiers there were.
So, yeah, and then you can...
I mean, the numbers here at the beginning and end of the book were dealing with the soldiers.
Yeah.
And so then, so you assume that the soldiers are 20 and over that are in military age, then the ones that are under that is going to be another big group, and then the women and the children, you know, all that, they're just, that's where they get the calculation from.
Yeah, I was just curious.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So then, you know, the weather, you know, hot and dry and dusty, especially when you got all those people walking and kicking up the dust.
It'd be cold at night, wouldn't it? Freezing.
Probably.
Dangerously freezing.
Gerard? In Numbers 11, Moses is kind of like complaining to God, and he said, because the people were like complaining about the manna and stuff, and Moses kind of makes it sound like God. In a sense, he makes it sound like he's the father of all the people, and in a sense, they're like the children. And they're like complaining and whinging to him, and like, you know, like, come on, like, fix this issue, like, you're the dad. Because he mentions, like carrying them in thy bosom as a nursing father bear the sucking child, and then he's different for people. So I guess in that context, is imagine if it's like having millions of kids and all whinging, want that because I'm feed.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
It was not an easy time. You know, their food. I mean, God provided manna for them every day during that whole time. And yet, you know, even us, I mean, it would be like every day, let's just assume that the manna was something like porridge, all right? It wasn't quite like that, but let's assume it was porridge. I mean, after a few days of porridge, how are we having our porridge today? You want it hot, cold? You want it dried? You want it steamed? You know, some of the time, I don't know, did, any idea whether the quail followed them along for 40 years?
Just flew in, I guess.
No, but I mean, did they have quail for the whole 40 years? No. They did part of the time. I don't think they did.
No.
But they had the manna that provided for them.
God gave them quail.
Yes.
As well.
And then, you know, there was all the memories. What were their memories of Egypt?
Oh, not very good. Slavery.
No, well, when they were complaining, it wasn't that.
Leeks and garlic.
They wanted the leeks and the garlics and the melons and the onions. And they said, we had all that nice veggie stuff down there, and now all we got is manna. And so there was all this complaining. You know, then the next question here is, what should we be looking for as we study this book? You know, some of the things that come to your mind now as we're getting prepared to go through this book, what are some things that would come to your mind, things that we should look for? Give you an idea of what I was thinking of, you know, things to avoid. You know, there's going to be things we need to avoid. We can see about God's character. How did God respond? How did God react? We can learn about leadership. How did Moses deal with all these grumblers and complainers? The dangers of complaining, the consequences of unbelief. You know, the book is a constant reminder of the consequences of unbelief. People dying all the time because of their unbelief. God told them, you're going to all die before you get to... And so they all knew that. As long... We got 40 years to wander, and we're all going to be dead before the 40 years is over. That's kind of a bleak thought. I mean, if it's up to year 37 and you're still kicking, you know that you're not going to make it very much longer. And your days are coming. And it's going to be your turn to die. You know, all these kind of things. But these are some of the things that I want you to be watching for as we go through this. Look for things that we can learn from. God gave us this book, not just for information, but for application.
Yes.
And we need to be looking for these things in order to find them as we work our way through. Now, what are some ways, in what ways do we often struggle with unbelief? You know, the book is really about unbelief. If you were to put one big word over the whole book, unbelief would be a good word to describe it. John Ray?
I guess when we worry, I mean, as Christians, we wouldn't like think, I think sometimes we think like, oh, I don't not believe the Bible. We might not, that's not necessarily what it means. Like, unbelief can even just be if you, if you worry, you're, in a way, you're not believing.
Yeah.
Because you're worried about something if you know God has the capability and you can take care of it.
You know, I was just reading, I was reading something that goes right hand in hand with that. In Psalm 78 a couple of days ago, and as I read there, in verse number 20, it says, behold, this is the people speaking to God. Well, I'll read 19 first. Yea, they spake against God, and they said, can God furnish a table in the wilderness? Behold, he smote the rock, and the waters gushed out, and the streams overflowed, can he give bread also? Can he provide flesh for his people? So, I mean, they saw what God had done, but then they questioned God's ability to do more. And we do the same thing. We know what God has done. I mean, we look at these things in the Bible, and, you know, there's a tendency for us to think, well, yeah, God did all those great things in the Bible days, but God doesn't do too much like that today. But it's the same God. He's the same God. He's got the same power. He hasn't changed any. He doesn't always dynamically show himself out like he did in sometimes of these cases, but God is there. And when we have problems, we need to trust God. When we, you know, we face difficulties, we need to just face them without worry. So these are the kind of things that I want you to be looking at, pondering over as we work our way through. Next week, we're going to cover the second page, and we'll fill in the blanks that you have there on the second page next week. But so if you have an opportunity to read chapters 1 and 2 before next week, that would be a help to you, make you a little bit more familiar with what we're going to be looking at here.